game. Stop the talk show, product of what you're taught to know. Forfeit the game, cause tomorrow, when it's all done, you reap what you sow.
And welcome once again to another episode of Line Interference, brought to you by Lineman.net. I, of course, am Lineman, and we're going to be joined here pretty soon by Cold Drink and Israel off the site, a couple of my administrators there. Now, before we get things going here, I want to address a couple issues here that seem to be concerning a lot of people. First of all, yes, there have been some changes to the site. We are no longer accepting open membership. You can't just come in and join anymore. And frankly, since we've made this policy change, we've had quite a few people that have asked and said, hey, I want to join. I can offer this or that or bring this to the site. And so far, just about every one of them have ended up being troublemakers. And we're really working hard on this site and, frankly, don't need those distractions. So we shut things down for a while and weren't allowing new members. Now, what we've done to try and kind of alleviate this and kind of get back to the feel of the original site when we started out as just a forum is we've gone back and created a new site called techdiscussions.com. It has pretty much the same categories that we had before, like a couple extras. I split the computer section up a little bit. But it's a lot of the same people. We've got some new people there, and it's a lot more of a laid-back atmosphere, and people can just discuss whatever. Anything related to tech. And that's techdiscussions.com. There's no dash, there's no zeros, just techdiscussions.com. Now, the topic for today's episode is going to be programming. And we talked about this a while back. This episode's taken a while to get going just because of all the administrators here had to kind of get on the same page what we were going to do and decide on topics and, frankly, find time to record this stuff. Well, programming sounds like a really dry topic. I can't imagine ever hearing a radio show that talked about programming. But we're going to try and do this a little bit different, talk about things that really lend themselves to being in this format, to be audio, because we can't show you any pictures or any code or anything. So it's going to be a little bit of an overview, but hopefully we inspire you to program, and just, you know, even if you already program, you're going to learn a little bit about it. Now, to start things off, what I wanted to discuss is how can you get involved with programming. I know there's a lot of people who kind of have an interest in it. They're not really sure where to go with it or what they could possibly do with programming. I mean, hey, I'm just getting started here. I don't know much about programming. I haven't programmed at all before. Well, there are some things you can do to kind of get yourself going, and you don't have to be alone in this. Now, this is just one example of what you can do, but it's something that anybody can get involved with. Now, if you aren't familiar with it yet, and a lot of you probably have heard about it or at least run across the site before, there's a site called SourceForge.net. Now, this site is pretty much devoted to all sorts of open source and free software. So far, everything I've seen on there is free and open source. But just in case anybody's not sure, because these expressions are used pretty interchangeably, open source just means literally the source code behind the programs is open. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's free. For example, there are certain distributions of Linux that are going to be open source, but you're going to have to pay for them. I think Red Hat's going that direction now and some of the others. But they're still open source, so you can still alter them as you need for your own use. Free, on the other hand, just means literally it's free. Now, the same way open source doesn't imply free, free doesn't imply open source. There's a lot of software out there that is considered freeware, but it's not necessarily open source. And it may still say in the license agreement, you can't decompile this, you can't alter the source code or binary code or anything. So make sure you know the difference between those terms. Now back to SourceForge.net, there is a ton, and I mean a ton, of software available on this site. Even if you're not wanting to get involved with open source and development or anything like that, you can still download the software and just use it to your heart's content. And it's pretty impressive. I mean, you can search for just about anything you can think of. I usually go there first any time now, where in the past I would have gone to download.com or something like that to find a piece of software to do something simple. There's usually something equivalent on SourceForge that you can try out and is naturally free. Now, some of it's in the developmental stage, and it may be buggy, but then again, a lot of software is like that anyway that isn't considered in the development stage, so that may not be a bad thing. Well, there's a lot of software that actually has originated from SourceForge you may not even realize. For example, if you go to lineman.net, all the pages are created using a content management system. The one we use is called PHPNuke. Now, there are also other types of content management systems on there. For example, Cold Drink off of our site developed one called Light PHP CMS, which he says is poorly named, but I actually think it's pretty appropriate that it's just a very plain, simple name, and that's kind of the whole concept behind his content management system, that it's very straightforward and flexible by being simple. Other software on there is PHPBB, a PHP bulletin board system. A lot of sites use that. That comes from SourceForge. And then there's actually another project that the members, or a few members from lineman.net, are involved in called the Mercury IRC. And it's an IRC client written in Java that Cold Drink kind of came up with the idea for, and you know, a lot of us would actually find that pretty useful. So some of us are helping him out with that. But using that as an example, I can show you how there are different ways you can get involved with the open source community at SourceForge. So let's say that you want to get involved with something like Mercury IRC or some other project, and you're just wanting to get involved with programming, do something, you know, want to learn about it and get your feet wet. Well, there's different things you can do. Now, first of all, obviously, you can get involved in the programming. Now, I wouldn't go around begging people to give you coding jobs to do with their project. I mean, there may be a few out there that need somebody to do some serious coding for them, but a lot of times I'd say that the person who came up with the whole idea is going to have a big part in the coding. So they might have this or that, a little bit part, some procedure or function that they need somebody to work on, but all in all, I'd say the other jobs are the ones you're going to find that they're asking people for. Now, the most obvious one, besides programming, is just going to be testing, some form of testing, beta testing. Now, most of you are probably aware of beta testing. It's just pretty much you've got something that's good enough to release, at least to a few people. They try it out, and they report any problems they have. Pretty simple. Now, if you feel like you've never done this and you're not qualified, actually, you probably are. Because if you look at software such as what Microsoft puts out and some of the other big software vendors, it really, if you know what's going on, it seems like you're getting cheated in a lot of cases. For example, when Windows ME came out, it was pretty cheap. I think I got it for $50, and I think somebody picked it up for me for Christmas. You know, I gave it a shot. Well, it's pretty much a consensus that it was junk, and it was thrown together, and there was really no reason for it. But I really got the impression, as a lot of other people did, that when we were using Windows ME, all we were really doing was doing beta testing for Microsoft. Now, not to pick on Microsoft, because that's, you know, kind of a bandwagon everybody wants to jump on, but that's one that really comes to mind with some of these situations. Another situation with beta testing, or where it seems to me like we were doing beta testing, was with some of the earlier versions along that line, such as Windows 95. I mean, there's three different versions of Windows 95 that came out, and I would consider them updates. Apparently, Microsoft didn't think that because you had to buy all of them separately. Windows 98 came out, and rather than just releasing service packs like would be the sensible thing to do and the honest thing, if you ask me, they came out with, oh, well, this is Windows 98 SE, which actually was a pretty good step up, and there were a lot of things that were missing from the original Windows 98. But anyway, back to my point, there's a lot of times that you're basically doing beta testing for a software vendor. If you're using the first edition of a new program, well, guess what? They may have called something beta testing and had people try it out, but it's really hard to believe they had that many people try it because there's so many things that cause problems and just so many different environments that people are using this software in. What's it going to create a conflict with? Well, anyway, back to things you can do. Beta testing, of course, one of them for open source projects. But then one thing you can do that a lot of people may not have considered is documentation, which I know sounds extremely boring, except maybe to those of you who actually enjoy writing. I happen to be one of you. If you have no idea what you're doing with programming yet, and you just want to get involved and, you know, maybe have your name attached to something, you know, do something, well, you can get involved in documentation. Now, what that entails is going to depend a little bit on what they need, what sort of software you're going to be working on, but this is a good way to get started. And it may be something as simple as you test it out, and you just write a text file on how you installed it, something like that. Or maybe you're going to get a little more involved in it, take some screenshots, put them all together in a nice little article sort of format, and just show how to install something, how to operate it, how to do some of the basics. But the whole point of all this is that there are ways that you can get involved in this whole big can of worms called open source. There's something that just about anybody can do, and I really encourage you to get involved with some aspect of it. Whether you're a beginning programmer, you have no interest in programming, or if you really are advanced in it and think, well, hey, maybe I can get with somebody else and come up with a new idea. Or maybe you're just not feeling very creative and you don't know, well, what do I want to code? What do I want to work on? Maybe they can give you some ideas at sourceforge.net. Now, to kind of get us in the mood for this whole programming episode here, there's a little audio file that I found here called the Computer Code Hoedown. So let's check this out.
This function is void, it takes two args. The first is SDC, a pointer to a vector of 2048 unsigned bytes. That are the encrypted sector and will be decrypted. Well, the second arg we have is key, a vector of 6 unsigned bytes that are encrypted title key. There's local variables 21236. They're unsigned and send in this pointer to SDC plus 2048. Now let's all come together, bow to your partner, and let's begin the procedure. First, retrieve by 0 of key, store residue 4 of SDC, or with 256, and store that in D1. Now, retrieve byte 1 of key, store residue 85 of SDC, and store that in D2. Take bytes 235 of key, and store them with bytes 86 or 89 of SDC, and store that in D3. Now, add D3 with a constant 7, and store that in D4. Multiply T3 by 2, add H back 4, and store back in D3. Advance D by 128 bytes, plus 0 is D byte. And let's begin a while loop! Wow! SDC does not equal end, and T2 is an index. Two tables have to receive a byte, and store that in D1. And T2 is another index, this time two tables have 3. Retrieve another byte and call it B2 and make T4 store B1's or B2. Now our partnership to the right, store it in T2. And T1 with a constant 1 shift left 8 bytes and store with T4 and that'll goes in T1. And T4 is an index to the tables have 5. Break out one byte and store that in T4. Shift T3 right, 3 bits or with T3 shifted, right. 1 bit or with T3 shifted, right. 8 bits or with T3 shifted, right. 5 bits and all that with 255 and store that in T6. Now shift T3 left, 8 bits or it with T6 and store that in T3. T6 is an index to table that 4, just retrieve a byte and store it in T6. Some T6, T5, and T4, store that in T5. Now retrieve a byte using SDC and store it with the end of T5 and 255. Store back in the byte and advance it to T5-1. Now don't y'all get tired on me, there ain't much left to code. Just shift T5 right by 8 bits and store that in T5. And that's the while loop. Return from the procedure. Bow to your partner. If this song violates the DMCA, then I stick a middle finger at the MPAA. Yeah!
Well, that was certainly interesting, wasn't it? If you feel like you didn't get half of what they were saying, well, you're not the only one. I'm going to have to play that in slow motion a little bit to figure out what's going on there on some of that. Now, if you were one of the people who thought, hey, don't have to worry about Israel on this one, we're talking programming. Well, Sorry to disappoint you, but he's found a way.
Mother, tell your children not to walk my way. Tell your children.
Hello, everyone. This is Israel. And for Line Interference 3, the topic is programming. Now, you may be saying to yourself, Self, just how is Israel going to do a social engineering segment that pertains to programming? How's he going to do it? Okay, you might not be so melodramatic about it, but the answer to that is easy. Social engineering also covers the art of people programming, obviously, or writing brain code. That's so cool.
Brain code.
Okay, I'll start off with an example of what I'm talking about. Let's say you're an administrator on a forum, and that you're on this forum every single day. Without fail, you come to the site. All of a sudden, you completely disappear for a week without so much as a peep. No mention of you leaving beforehand. You are gone. When you come back to the site, you find that you have multiple private messages. You've also been receiving emails and phone calls as to where you have been. Are you okay? Did you die? Whatever. You're getting them from all the other admins and from some members of the site. When you get back, you say, I'm back, everyone. I'm sorry I was gone, but there was a death in the family, and I had to go out of state. You automatically get a programmed response that all people give in that situation. I'm sorry for your loss. Or, I'm so sorry to hear that. Or, I feel bad for your loss. Hell, even a complete stranger will tell you they're sorry for your loss. All because it's something that is programmed into us from the time we are young. By the way, sorry to make an example out of the admins and site members, but I wanted to test this out before I put it in the segment. There's also the bless you or Gesundheit when someone sneezes, the aww when a group of females looks at someone's baby picture. There's too many others to name, but I'm sure you get the point. These are automated responses. So now we get to the more important question. How would someone go about writing this program? This part isn't easy to explain, but I'm going to give it a shot. First of all, you're going to have to determine what you want your program to do. Exactly what type of response are you trying to make your program cause? For example, every time you point a camera at someone, you want them to say cheese. No, wait, someone already did that one. Oh, well, you get the point. Second, you'll need to figure out what will make that person give the response you are looking for. Will it be a word, a phrase? Will it be something they see, something they hear? Oh, how about every time you're riding in a car with your friends and Bohemian Rhapsody comes on the radio, you start headbanging and lip-syncing to the song like a bunch of idiots? Wait, I think someone already did that one too. All the good ones are already taken. Well, on to the final part. Tattooing the program onto someone's brain. I read somewhere that it takes 16 days for a habit to completely lock itself in place. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but you're going to have to assume it's somewhat correct, so plan on running your program as often as possible to ensure that it takes permanent residence in the thought process. Once it takes hold, your program is successful. This is not something that's easy to accomplish, and trust me, you're going to fail many, many, many times more than you succeed. But when your program finally starts running without error, and all the failed attempts are finally wiped away, that one successful program will be worth it. I hope you got a little something out of this. Even if this is just something you toy around with in your spare time, you might say something to somebody, see what they say back. Find out what people's automated responses are and jot them down. It's worth keeping note of because you may want to use them later. It's all worth taking a shot just to see if you can do it. So have fun with it and enjoy writing your new program.
Thanks, Israel. Jerk. Yeah, I got a little people programming of my own to try on you, Israel. Let's try this. Feels good to yawn, doesn't it? Well, I've got something else I'm going to play here for you. And this, just like the computer code hoedown, is not an original by me or anybody else on the site, but it's entertaining nonetheless. Now, the first time I heard this, I just about ran off the road. I've become quite a fan of these, even though I'm not a fan of Budweiser, I've become quite a fan of their commercials, the Real American Heroes and the Real Men of Genius campaign there. And this is one that's a little bit computer related, so let's listen to this.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Company Computer Guy.
Mr. Company Computer Guy.
You are the ruler of the RAM, the guru of the gigabyte, the monster of the memory.
Show me the way.
When we screw up the boot up, you are there. Without you, computers would megabyte.
Megabyte.
The countless hours we spend surfing the internet and accidentally stumbling upon porn sites would instead be spent working.
Working for the man.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, Mr. Company Computer Guy. For it's you who keeps our logons logging and our hard drives hard.
You gotta see this porn site.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Man, those things are hilarious. Well, getting back to the topic of programming, we've got Cold Drink, who's going to try to convince you of why you should learn to program.
Hello everybody, Cold Drink here. As you know, today on Line Interference we're talking about programming. Well, programming what, you may say? Not just computers. Of course, it's not VCRs either. You can program your computer, program that new PDA you got or that $100 calculator you bought for the kit. It really just depends on what you're interested in doing. But why program? What's the whole point, you might ask? This is just something for software developers, you probably thought. Well, there are a lot of good reasons for you to program your own programs. Personally, I started because I couldn't find something that did what I wanted to do and find it at a reasonable price. I wanted to make sure that if I ran a program, it did exactly what I needed it to do and the exact way I needed it to do it. That's why I got started. And if you can program, you can write your own programs, or of course you could modify open source software. You could make it something that maybe is a little bit more customized to you. You can also write that perfect quick utility, maybe that one or two line program that does exactly what you need it to do. It really depends, just opens up a lot of doors for you. It's also a lot about education, and how much do you really know about your computer? I mean, you know when you click a button something happens, but do you really know what happens in the background there? I mean, just think about how much you know about your car versus how much the mechanic knows. That mechanic is under the hood. They know about everything. They know about the guts. With programming, you can really learn about the guts of your operating environment if you're interested. And this intimate knowledge lets you know a lot more. It makes it easier to solve problems because you understand the error messages better. You know what's happening in the background. You can also make your computer do what you want it to do a lot easier because you understand more about it than the average guy does. You could write a little screensaver to just do some simple transformations or just make some wild colors if you want. It doesn't really matter. It just will help you learn a lot about that and how to accomplish it. It can take away from your programming practice that you can use in the everyday world. You can do metric transformations if you want. You can even write physics engines and have 3D objects interact with each other. That'll teach you a lot more about physics, about equations, about kinetics. It really depends. You can apply this to anything you want to apply it to. But why? Why is this so important? Why is education so important? I mean, you may think you know enough about your computer, but do you really know enough? What happens on that day where you want to do something but you don't know how? Or you want software to get this job done for you and you don't know what to do? Every day when you're using your computer or anything else, you're at the mercy of programmers. What happens when your favorite email client is gone? It's no longer developed. Or what happens when the world changes and everything commercial has digital management and you just want to play your MP3s? How do you get around that? If you're a programmer, you know about the inner workings, you know how to around these things. Or you know how to implement something that you're going to want to use yourself. Personally, everything I've written, I've written for me. And my programming over the past, I don't know, I can't even count how many years, I've developed so much software, most of which is lost, but so much software that fit my needs perfectly. And you just can't do that without being a programmer. It's really the best thing to do. Any serious computer user should at least know a little bit about programming. It just opens up so many doors for you. It's just like your basic high school math. You might not use it today or might not even use it tomorrow, but it opens up so many things to you. Advanced math, computer science, chemistry, biology. You need those math skills to break into all these fields. With programming, it gives you the intimate knowledge of the computer and those advanced skills that let you do anything you want with it. Well, thanks for spending this time with us again, and this is CD signing off, taking you back to a line interference.
Thanks, CD. Now, I'm trying to decide whether I want to know where that intro music of his came from, but I'm not sure I want to. Now, before we go to our last segment of Line Interference, I've got another little audio file for you to listen to. This is a call from the new governor of California to Gateway, and he's wanting to upgrade his computer. Let's give this a listen.
Thanks for calling Gateway, where we're putting people before technology. My name is Cassie. What's yours?
I'm Detective John Kimble.
John, how are you doing tonight?
How are you?
Good. Are you looking at possibly adding on to your Gateway?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you had your Gateway for more than 30 days, John?
Yes.
Okay. And did you purchase it for use in your home or for business? For home?
Yes.
Okay. And was the Gateway for use inside the United States only?
Yes.
Okay. I kind of have bad news for you, John. The add-on sales department that you'll need to talk to is closed for the evening.
Come on. Don't bullshit me.
No, I'm not. Their hours are 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Friday, and that's Central Standard Time.
Well, you must be very proud of yourself. Yeah.
They're also open from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday.
What's the matter?
So if I could have you just call back, you know, just call back this number.
You son of a bitch.
And, John...
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that, but there's nothing that I can do. You know, the department is closed, right?
Stop it!
Well, if you call back, you know,
stop
during
whining.
If you just call back during one of those times tomorrow, John, add-ons will be able to help you out, okay?
Negative.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
Well, what kind of questions were you going
to
ask?
First, I would like to just get to know you.
Well, John, I'm not in the sales department, so I'm not going to be able to help you with the computer. Do you already have a Gateway?
Who are you?
My name is Cassie.
Yeah.
Oh, do you already have a Gateway, John?
My CPU is a neural net processor, a learning computer.
Okay. And were you were looking at
Stop
adding...
Stop it! Give me your address.
Okay, John, I'm sorry, but you're going to need
Stop
to call
it.
And talk to add-ons tomorrow, okay?
Stop
thanks
whining!
Thanks for calling Gateway.
And welcome back. Now, the thing I wanted to discuss and to kind of end this on in the topic of programming is a question that you go to any site that has any sort of forum relating to programming, you're going to see this question over and over and over again. So I'm going to do my best here to give a definitive answer. The question is, what programming language should I begin with? I've seen quite a few answers to this, and there's a lot of discussion, and naturally, a flame war ensues. Well, I've kind of got the forum here, so to speak, and I'm going to give you my two cents on it. Feel free to disagree. Well, if you're wanting to write this down, why don't you run and get a piece of paper so I can explain to you which programming language you should begin with. You ready? It doesn't matter! For goodness sakes, I want to scream that at the top of my lungs every time I see this huge debate over what programming language should I begin with. It doesn't matter! You believe me? Well, let me try to explain it. Now, first of all, let's try to discuss how these programming languages work, how they interact with the computer, and all this. And it kind of comes down to compilers and machine language, assemblers and assembly language, and then third generation programs, programming languages. What are all these things? Well, first of all, the compiler and machine language, this has to do with the ones and zeros language that you're always hearing about, binary code. Anytime you run an executable file, you know, like in Windows, it's going to end in .exe or .com, .com. Anytime you run one of these, they're written in machine language. These are very low-level things, but once they've been compiled, that's what you've got. So where do you end up with this stuff? Well, this stuff, when you have something written in machine language, it's going to run very fast. Faster than anything else, and the code is going to be shorter. The thing is, it's really, really complicated to write. Most people can't write anything in machine language. Now, machine language varies, if you're interested in this, it varies a little bit from machine to machine. So when you end up with operating systems to be run on a different sort of architecture, sometimes you need to have different sorts of packages available, because the machine language is going to vary with different machines. Like, for example, my laptop here has a machine language. If I have a router, it's going to have a machine language of its own. If I go to a Coke machine, it's going to have its own machine language. Just all sorts of different machines have different machine languages, but it all comes down to ones and zeros. Well, to make any sort of operating system, you're going to have a certain amount of things that are written in machine language. I mean, this is all the machine knows, and you have to have that before it's going to understand anything else. So this is the goal in the end. Once you compile something, machine language, executable. Now, the assembler and assembly language, there's a lot of confusion about this. I'm going to try and give you the basics on it. A lot of times people will say assembler when they mean compiler and vice versa, because these are terms that, in most cases, can be used interchangeably. Even though it's not correct, most people are going to understand what you're talking about when you say it and know what you really mean. Well, assembly language is kind of in between your third generation languages and machine language. It's getting close to machine language, but it's not quite there. It's going to have syntax and structure, and going to have certain things that are similar to English language or whatever, but it's not going to be as easy to read as your third generation languages are. So why do they use it? Well, like I said, it's kind of an intermediate step. It's in between machine language and third generation languages. You can use this to write things that are going to actually run a little bit faster. The code's going to be a little bit shorter than in other languages, other high-level languages, but it's not going to be as difficult to write as machine language. Okay. Well, then you've got third-generation languages. Now, what in the world are these? Well, there are things such as BASIC, C, C++, Pascal. These are just your basic, run-of-the-mill programming languages that you're going to hear about. Now, there are some other things that you may be wondering about, such as Java and and Perl and some of these. Well, these are interpreter languages, and these are... I'm not going to go into that. If you get this stuff, then these are the basics of what I'm talking about here. Now, here's what I'm getting at on these different levels of languages. This part of why it doesn't matter what programming language you learn in, if you're using any of these third-generation languages, there are going to be different things that they help you out with. For example, BASIC is going to be really easy to understand for somebody that's just starting out. They can look at the code and, okay, I can kind of follow what's happening. With C or C++, either one, you're going to have a lot more things available, a lot more pre-made commands and procedures and functions and that sort of thing that are available to you. But when it comes down to it, if you're making some sort of executable code, you're just going to be compiling it into machine language anyway. So it's really not as important as people make it. You shouldn't place that much importance on what programming language you learn. If you end up going on to get a degree in computer science, you're going to end up learning a ton anyway. And so whatever you start out with certainly isn't going to hurt you. Now, there's another reason that I'm trying to argue that it doesn't matter what programming language you start with. Now, let me give you the analogy here. Let's say, well, for example, my wife and I are expecting a baby here pretty soon. Well, we, of course, want our child to be a good speaker and have a command of language, but are we going to argue about what language our child starts with? I mean, for example, if we want our child to someday learn Latin and Spanish and French and some different languages, does it matter what we start them out with? Well, are there some languages, like for example, if I want my child to learn Japanese someday, is there a language we could start out with that maybe would help? Well, sure, there's probably a language that it's easier to go from one to another with. On the other hand, we're going to use what's available to us. What's going to be natural for us? Well, the language we already know, the language that we have the resources to use, and so you start out. I mean, in our case, we're going to start out teaching our kid English. But nobody starts out trying to figure out, well, what language do I teach my kid? What do we want them to speak? Well, they're going to start out with whatever's natural for them. So it's really not as big a deal as people make. I mean, just like human language is just a way to communicate. I mean, that's the whole point of it, to express ideas with different people. That's what's happening with computers, except these are the ways that people interact with computers and computers interact with each other. That's the whole point of programming and programming languages. So, doesn't really matter. Feel free to disagree with me, but I think I argue a decent case for that. Now, I just want to discuss a little bit about programming real quick before I wrap this up and tell you a little bit of my experience. Now, the way I look at it, there are three different aspects to computer programming, three kind of pillars to the whole thing. Well, first of all, there's syntax. Syntax is another reason why I think there's too much weight put on what language do I start with, what's the best one. The main difference between any programming language is going to be the syntax. Do I use spaces? Do I use braces? What do I do? Do I type if I want to put in a remark? If I want some sort of printed output to the screen, what command do I use? That's all a matter of syntax. I mean, the same sorts of things different languages can do is just how do you tell it to. Now, the second thing is logic. Logic is just the pure ability to reason. This and this means this. This or this means this. This kind of true-false stuff that you learn if you end up taking any sort of symbolic logic class. Sometimes you'll take it in some upper level math classes. But in programming, this is going to be a really big deal. You have to be able to get this logic down. Well, syntax and logic are important, but they can be taught. Basically, anybody can sit down and, if they really want to, can learn these things. So what's the third thing? Creativity. This is a tough one. You can't teach it. The analogy I use with this when I've taught people just how to try to think about things, to be creative, it's kind of like there's a pool, and you can push people up to the diving board, and you can push them as close as you want, But to be creative, they've got to dive in on their own. They've got to create their own type of dive. Well, that's the thing with creativity. You just can't teach it. Now, here's one reason why you may want to reconsider starting out with something like C++ if you're just beginning to program. When I start out programming, and let me say, I'm only 25, but it seems like there's a lot of you that are missing out on, I wouldn't say the heyday of computing, but maybe some of the things you could learn from. I started out programming on a Commodore 64, which even when I got it, it was several years old, but still learned a lot, and you just programmed in their version of BASIC. What I learned from that, and I didn't appreciate it at the time, because I was only, I guess, 6 or 7 years old at the time when I got it, was there weren't a lot of predefined things in there. I mean, you could tell it to print, you could tell it to take input, use data, things like this. But as far as getting it to do anything really interesting, like manipulate text or to take input and format it in different ways, it didn't really have a lot you could do with that. So there were things that I figured out how to do. Like, for example, if I had a bunch of data and I wanted to create some sort of bar graph, well, I had to figure out the math of how to do this, even though I didn't really understand all the math that I was doing. I just kind of tinkered with it and figured it out. You know, I found a solution to a problem where the solution wasn't predefined. Well, there are other examples. Well, let's say I wanted to center text on the screen. Yeah, I could go through manually and figure it out for each thing, but it's a lot quicker if I can write some sort of subroutine that'll handle that for me. So I figured out the logic to this and just kind of tinkered with it and figured it out. Well, this is the toughest thing to do with programming, because if you're told what to do and basically how to do it, well, yeah, you can code it. And when you're in school learning to program, they're going to give you a whole lot of situations. You're going to have to do your best to try and find a solution that uses the things you know up to that point. But to actually find a problem and come up with a creative solution is one of the toughest things to do. Now, because of coming from this background, starting out with BASIC that had very little to it, I ended up learning a lot about problem solving and just learning to be creative with some of these things that a lot of people are going to miss out on. You do enough of these things, and hopefully it clicks and you figure it out, but I'm repeating myself, but there's no way to teach this. Now, here's where I've really reaped the benefits of starting out this way, with a language that is as simple and as weak as BASIC is. I will probably never go back. I mean, now that I've learned C++, I'm probably never going to go back and learn an entire language from scratch. I mean, I might if I'm just really interested and there's something new, but for the most part, I'm probably not going to do that. Is that going to hurt me? Well, I really don't think it is. And here's why. When I start out running the site in PHP Nuke, and even before that when I was just using an Envision bulletin board, and that was the whole site, there were times that I wanted to try different things, I had to fix different things, you know, security patches and all that. Well, I don't know PHP, and I still don't know PHP. But I can go back and look at it, and I can figure out what it's doing and why it's doing this. I'll see some of these variable names and things, and I have no idea what I'm doing. But if I look at enough of the code, I can kind of figure out what's going on and how this is happening. Now, for me, that was how I learned to program in BASIC after I learned some of the simple things like print and input, just by looking at code. They used to have these great magazines that would publish programs that you just had to type in. It may be 1,000 lines, but then you'd create your own game or you'd be making one of theirs. But now I can go and look at this code with languages I don't even know and kind of have an idea what's going on. If I had started out with something like C++ or Java, if one of those were my first programming languages, I would have started out with something that had a ton of things that were available in it. For example, if you're using C++, you look at the string class, there are so many things you can do with strings. I mean, things that you've never even imagined that might be handy. They're already in there, so you don't have to worry about it. For example, if I wanted to go through and, let's say I wanted to go through and make every letter in a word capital, Basic doesn't have something, well, at least any version I've used that I know of, doesn't have a function built into it that'll capitalize all those letters for you. But then you get into something like Java or C++ or Perl or anything like that, they've probably got a function that will do that for you. So I would start out with something that isn't as strong and learn some of those things. You know, try to solve some of these problems, and you'll really appreciate some of the software that we have now and what it's capable of doing. You'll get to see what kind of time was put into those. Well, I hope you learned something about programming today, or at least got something to think about. And again, as I started the show with, I really encourage you to get involved with open source in some way. Even if you're just using open source, that's really going to make a big difference there. Try these programs out. I'd like to thank Israel and Cold Drink for their segments to the show. I really appreciate that. All the members on the site and the other admins, appreciate everything you do. If you haven't yet, be sure to visit techdiscussions.com. Go ahead and sign up for an account, ask your questions, answer questions, whatever you want to do. It's pretty laid-back form. And again, check out sourceforge.net for open source software, or just to get involved with some projects. Everybody have a Merry Christmas, and I'll see you on the forums.